Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Milt Hinton, the most respected and admired musician on the scene today. He's been everywhere, played with everybody, and he's been playing great bass for 65 years. You know, you must have started when you were three, Milt.
Not really, you know. I'm a little older than that.
Well, tell me something.
Okay.
Who are some of the people you played with?
Okay, I'll tell you just some of the people. It goes something like this. I was born in Mississippi in the year of 1910. We moved up to Chicago, and I never got back again. Now, I played with Cab and Louie, with Doc and Streisand too, with Clark and Press and Dizzy and Marin and some other fellas too. I jammed with Benny Goodman, with Basie, Duke, and Earl. I toured England with Bing Crosby and the Middle East with Pearl. Now, in 1939, I met Mona. That's my bride. And nothing's been the same ever since. You know, I fell in love. She blew my mind, took the money, and then she went shopping, and I seldom see her since. I even worked with Jackie Gleason and played rags with Hubie Blake. I've been to the White House many times, and that's icing on the cake. I even strolled with Freddie Keppert and Tiny Parham, too. Now I'm the oldest bass player standing. I got shoes as old as you. Now I've had a wonderful time when I was in my prime. Now I'm tired, and I think I'm going to go home.
Oh, Milt, that's wonderful.
Hey, thank you.
You know, I guess the first time I heard you do that was when we were touring in Europe. We had such a nice time, and where the heck were we? Antibes.
Yeah, that's right.
No, wait a minute. It was in Denmark, and we were sitting on the couch with all those press people.
Oh, yes.
And all of a sudden you went into that, and that really kind of relaxed everybody.
Yeah, well, they wanted to ask us some questions, and everybody was a little shy. The guys were shy about asking questions, and I jumped into this thing that my dear friend Dr. David Berger, the co-author of my book, Basslines, wrote this for me, and I think just to tell everybody in rap form some of the things that I've done and some of the places that I've been.
Well, you know, that's one of the best raps I've ever heard. I mean, you can have most of them, but that one is really cute. And it really tells a story. Well, now you... A lot of people don't know this. You actually were born in Vicksburg, Mississippi.
That's true. 1910. That's 81 years ago.
Wow. It's amazing. You know, you've done so much. And watching you when we were on the tour, you have so much energy and you just love to play, don't you?
I love to play. And I've been extremely lucky health-wise, and that's very important, you know.
Well,
I come from a family. My grandmother was a slave of Joe Davis, Jefferson Davis's father, who was president of the South, and she lived to be 103.
Oh,
and my mother lived to be 93. So buying plane wrecks and automobiles, I got a good chance.
Well, you know all the tunes, so you're not going to have any problem. Just keep doing more of the same.
As long as I can play with you, I'm happy.
Well, we did have a good time. But tell me about... life in Vicksburg, Mississippi. I mean, how did you get started playing?
Well, I started in Chicago. See, I moved up to Chicago, and my mother was an organist of a church.
Yeah.
And she wanted me to be a violin player, so I started out playing violin when I was 13 years old. And I worked up until 1929, Al Jolson made the first sound movie. And before that, they had lots of orchestras with violins in it playing for the sound on the stage, because there was no sound on the screen. 1929, when Jolson made the jazz, I think it was the Jazz Singer, or whatever the name of the picture, movie, there was no more needed for violins and orchestras in the pit, because mm-hmm. the sound was on the screen. And in Chicago, every violin player lost his job.
Oh,
but jazz
goodness.
Was very prominent. Jimmy Noon was there, and Louis Armstrong was there, General Morton were there, and they had all these combos with bass fiddles in it. And I said, heck, I better get an instrument that I can make a living with. And since the bass is like a violin, it's tuned in fourths, and the violin is tuned in fifths, all you have to do is just back it up a little bit and grow. So that's what I began to do. And later I got to teachers and tried to learn how to play it correctly.
Boy, it's amazing. You know, but before we go any further, let's you and I play something.
Yeah, that's good.
Standing here, you've got the bass, I've got the piano.
Okay.
How about like All the Things You Are?
That's a good tune.
Okay.
I'm with you. You know, for the last 50 years, I've been taking pictures of musicians. Somebody gave me a camera many years ago, an August C3, and it was being introduced on the market for $25. And it thrilled me. And since I was on the road traveling with Cab Calloway, whose band I played in for 16 years, I was traveling all over the country, and I thought it'd be a nice idea to take pictures of musicians in their own habitat, the way I saw them on the bus, sleep, in the restaurants, eating, and all that sort of stuff, different situations like that. So I started taking pictures of all these different people, never thinking anything would happen to them, and I filed them away. And I got a young student that started studying with me named David Berger. And he was interested in it. He became like my own son. He was around me all the time. And he didn't inquire about these pictures. He said, "Milt, who is this?" And I said, "Oh, that's Chu Berry. I took that in Atlanta, Georgia." And he started writing and filed all these pictures. And now we have over 50,000 negatives indexed and cross-indexed of all the musicians that I've ever worked with and been around.
Remember the day we all had to go up to Harlem for
that's a great picture.
Famous picture.
Yeah, and I was taking pictures,
yeah,
right?
The photographer took some, but you were taking some on the side.
He was trying to get, the photographer wanted all of a sudden one group up against the steps.
Yes.
But I saw musicians in their own habitat, water seeking his own level. All the piano players and the ladies were together. That was you and Maxine Sullivan and Mary Lou Williams all standing out there laughing and talking.
Seeking our own level.
That's right. And all of the drummers were over there in one corner. And I thought this was amazing. So I began to shoot these kind of things with Joe Jones and Gene Krupa and Zooty Singleton and George Whitland and Art Blakey, all these good. And I got pictures of these guys in this kind of group. And so we finally came out with a book called Baseline with pictures and stories about all these wonderful things.
That's a fabulous book.
Thank you. It's in
its
second printing. And now we've got a new book that's coming out now, and this is called Overtime. It's got all new pictures of different pictures of musicians. I've been trying to photograph and catch all of the different group of musicians and the captions in there about who they played with and the nice things that happened to them.
But listen, tell me, like David Berger, you said he was a student of yours. I guess you started taking students years ago.
Yeah, well, he came around. I didn't really start taking students. I liked to share my experiences and my expertise with other young people. And he kept coming by the house and asking questions, and I started working with him. And he's from a very wealthy family, which I didn't know at the time. I just wanted to, because he was 15 years old, and he gave me $5. He had $5 for his first lesson, and it was a Saturday, and I couldn't take a whole $5 from a kid on Saturday. So I took three and gave him two back.
Oh,
and
that's funny.
Yeah, and I asked him about it later. I found out his father was very wealthy, and they did me some very wonderful favors, and we're still dear friends at this very day.
Hey, let's do another tune.
Good.
What
else
can we do? Well, let's have a go at My One and Only Love.
Okay.
Are you
going
to start this out?
Yeah, I think I was trying to start it out. Hang on.
Deal with like the bass players of today. They all want to play with such technique and playing up high and all that kind of stuff. What do you tell them?
Well, I think it's marvelous. But the first thing I try to talk to them about in the way I feel about bass. Bass, the word bass means bottom, as far as I'm concerned. Bass means bottom. It's the lowest instrument in the orchestra. Lowest musical voice in the orchestra. It's the lowest musical voice, vocal voice, and it means support. It means the bottom. And architecturally, it means support. A building won't stand strong unless the base has been is firm. So consequently, I have the feeling in my time that the bass is that I'm like Atlas. I'm holding this band up, and I have
sometimes
to.
Sometimes you are a bit.
Well, thank you. So I think that's along the line. But I like it, young people playing that some of them, and some of them are just playing wonderful. Now that we have different strings and different ways to play a bass, different bridges and good technique, they've done all of the technique, and they're like young children. When you have a little baby, you try to get them. Come on, say daddy, say mommy, say daddy, and you can't get them. Then pretty soon, like 2 or 3 years old, they start, daddy, mommy, daddy, mommy, mommy, daddy, what is this? You say, my God, I wish this kid would stop talking. So then they've learned how to speak, but then we have to teach them how to phrase things. At first, you must make sentences, and after you make sentences, and you make paragraphs, and paragraphs make chapters. So as they grow and they learn how to do these things, and it's wonderful. But to me, to get back to them, I like to show them some of the things that happened when I was a kid. When I first started playing, I was listening to all the great bass players like Wellman Broad that played with Duke Ellington and Pops Foster and Sam Brown that played with Paul Whiteman. And they were slapping the bass in those days. And I'd like to do one of those kind of things to show you how
yeah,
slap bass is.
I've always been interested in that. How that started.
Yeah, well, I heard all these great guys doing it. And like each generation does better than the next. We are always out. These young kids are playing circles around me now. So I was trying to play circles around these great bass players that were slapping the bass. And the old guys were slapping the bass like this. So when I came along, I said, yeah, I can do better than this. I said, got going. So then I kept that going and it disappeared. And so now when I see all these young guys doing something, I say, well, maybe I better do something to get myself over a little bit. So I concocted a little tune, if you let me play it for you,
so-called
Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho. And the walls came tumbling down. Is that cool?
Well, sure.
Okay, it goes something like this.
Hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast. Tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, Baldwin Piano Company, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.